Hey, I'm Jake. When I'm not making garlic bread, I like to study quasi-emission theory. So the name kind of spoils what the theory does. It breaks hermeticity. And so I guess the first thing you can ask is, well, why do we assume hermeticity in regular quantum mechanics? We do this for two reasons. A probabilistic theory needs to have two separate notions, one the probability sum to one, which we get through unitarity, and the second of real expectation values. And so usually we assume that the observables, such as the Hamiltonian, is Hermitian, so that we get both of these physical criteria. However, this is a sufficient but not necessary condition. The sufficient and necessary condition is quasi-hermeticity, which is defined like so. An operator is quasi-Hermitian basically if it looks Hermitian with respect to this new operator, which we call the metric. And it has to satisfy these three criteria. If it doesn't satisfy the three of these, then the spectrum isn't real. So there's no notion of real expectation values. Not only is the Hamiltonian assumed to be quasi-Hermitian, but the observables of the theory are also assumed to be quasi-Hermitian, basically so that under Schrodinger evolution, the expectation values are still real. And I don't change the Schrodinger equation at all. The only thing I'm changing is the hermeticity of the Hamiltonian. The new inner product, which I use to define expectation values, is like this. In normal quantum mechanics is a subcase of this. Yes?
I have a question. So in this whole picture, do you like pick one of these mu's from the start and then work with it like for the whole, like build the whole quasi-Hermitian theory from like just this one operator mu?
So I suppose it depends. I mean,
Like you have you do you want all operators to be like to satisfy this criterion one with respect to a single
yeah.
metric?
So you pick some particular metric, and all of the space of observables is all of the operators satisfying that criteria.
For that particular metric.
Yes.
And you can pick any that satisfies this conditions bounded, Hermitian and positive.
Yeah, so given a particular, hold on, let me just go to an example. So this is an example of a quasi-Hermitian model. And associated to this Hamiltonian, there's an entire space of metrics. You see there's this one parameter family of them, which depends on this real parameter. And so each of these defines a different theory. If I choose a different value for this parameter, I get different expectation values and different observables. So you can either take the point of view that you start with the Hamiltonian, and from there you derive a metric, of which the metric isn't unique, or you could start from a particular metric and then derive the space of observables and whatnot. And normal quantum mechanics is recovered from this. You just choose this metric operator to the immediate identity because you see this reduces that. Yes?
Is the metric here related to a metric on the classical phase space?
Is the metric related to a metric classical phase space? I mean, this metric is, I suppose you'd say it's related to the metric of the Hilbert space. You can derive like a, what is it? A distance from the norm that you derive from an inner product. And so you call this the metric because you define distances between two vectors in a Hilbert space from this. I don't necessarily think it has to do with the classical one. Unless I'm mistaken. So sometimes people call this field of quantum mechanics PT-symmetric quantum mechanics. I personally prefer quasi-hermeticity because it's more clear exactly what this is telling you. But just to summarize, there's a slightly weaker condition, which is if there's an antilinear symmetry of the Hamiltonian, then the energies come in complex conjugate pairs. The reason why you'd want something like this is so the partition function is still real. So even though the energies are not necessarily real, you can still have well-defined thermodynamics. In addition, if the symmetry is unbroken, so that the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian N are also eigenstates of the symmetry operator, then the energies are real. This is something that you can prove. In particular, oftentimes people choose this particular antilinear operator, the combination of parity and time reversal symmetry, to construct these types of theories. And so this is the example. This example is quite simple. It's just a quantum theory with two different spatial sites. There's this normal Hermitian term, which allows a particle to move between the two sites. But there's also, say, this source of probability here, which is inherently non-Hermitian. We say this is a source of probability because if you look in the unitary evolution, e to the minus iht, this thing looks like e to the gamma t. So this thing is diverging. It's like a source of probability. The way that people realize this in laboratory settings is they usually have like some sort of open system where some information is being set in. So for example, these will be like optical waveguides or something, and they have a laser which is being shot into the waveguide. And you trace out the degrees of freedom associated to the laser, so this is an effective model for this. Let's see. So this is a well-defined quasi-Hermitian theory for this particular range of parameters. So if the source of probability is sufficiently small, you still have a well-defined notion of unitarity and expectation values and whatnot. And this is the metric associated to it. After this particular choice in parameters, the eigenvalues become complex, the so-called PT-symmetric phase transition, which is where the eigenstates are no longer eigenstates of the symmetry operator. And this is reflected in the metric as well. This is the general solution to the metric equation. And this is no longer positive definite if gamma becomes too large. So now I wanted to mention, sorry?
Just one question. Can you go back? How did you obtain the gamma in this case? Like you started with Hamiltonian.
Yeah, I started with this thing, which is a phenomenological model of these two waveguides.
And then what do you do to obtain the metric?
Oh, okay. So.
Like, do you have some constraint on what it should be, and then you solve some equation?
So the general solution to the space of metrics is given by something like this. Let's see, and where these are the eigenstates of H dagger. In the case where H is equal to H dagger, these are the same thing, and this is like a completeness relation, so this sums to one. So by diagonalizing H and finding its eigenvectors, you can just put it into this sort of general solution.
Where does it come from? Why do you require this to be the metric?
Oh, this is just a general solution. Given a model H with eigenvectors n, this is the most general thing you could possibly have, which satisfies the original thing I told you about. This thing, equation one. So far is everything clear? This is just how I'm writing the theory. So now I wanted to tell you some reasons why people are interested in this theory. And it's probably best for me to explain the differences between this theory and regular quantum mechanics. In infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, the space of quasi-Hermitian theories is larger than the space of quantum theories. And in principle, this is promising for a study in quantum field theories, for example. The space of quantum field theories is heavily constrained by things such as renormalizability and gauge symmetry and Lorentz invariance. So in principle, this gives you a larger set of quantum field theories to think about, and I'll actually show you one of them later. In finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, there's actually an isomorphism between quasi-Hermitian theories and regular quantum theories. In some sense, you could imagine that associated to this inner product down here, there's a different Hilbert space, H prime, for which this thing looks Hermitian. So then you ask me, what's the actual difference between the two of these in finite dimensional Hilbert spaces? And the answer is that local quasi-Hermitian theory is not the same as local quantum theory. Basically, this metric operator can have non-local properties associated to it. And I'll explain to you some physical consequences of that later. In addition, even if you don't care about this as a fundamental theory, you can care about it as an emergent theory. So even if you don't bother to change the Hilbert space structure or anything like that, this is still something that you can use to describe emergent systems. And I'll show you one of these later. So firstly, let me explain to you why in infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, these aren't the same, even though in finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, they are the same. And this sort of basic proof is the way to see it. So the way that you show that a quasi-remission model still has real eigenvalues is you sort of construct a similarity transformation between the quasi-Hermitian Hamiltonian and some Hermitian Hamiltonian. And at this point, you know Hermitian Hamiltonian has a real spectrum. So this thing also has to have a real spectrum because it's similar to it. And this is just explicitly how you do it. It's constructed from the metric itself. The metric needs to be Hermitian and positive definite, as I mentioned earlier. However, in infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, operators have this funny property where they're not defined on the entirety of a Hilbert space. They're usually only defined on a dense subdomain of a Hilbert space. And because of that, this thing can have a smaller domain than the original operator. I have an example here, which is just the position operator in normal quantum mechanics. L2R is a space of square integrable functions. So this thing is actually not well defined on this particular wave function. This wave function is square integrable, but if you apply x to it, it's no longer square integrable. So this is another sort of example. This is an example of a quasi-Hermitian theory. You can prove that this thing does have a real spectrum associated to it. I'm not going to go into that. It's kind of complicated. You can also show that this thing has metrics associated to it which are bounded. So therefore, the spectrum is real. However, none of the metrics have bounded inverses. And because of that, they're not defined on the entire Hilbert space. So this thing is not as well defined as the original Hamiltonian, if that makes sense. So another point on describing emergent systems, I'm first going to show you this application to talk about spin transfer torque. Usually people talk about how these can be used to describe optical waveguide setups, but if you look up basically any paper on the topic, you'll find that. So I figured I'd show you a slightly less popular one. So spin transfer torque is basically a process where you send a polarized beams of electrons into a magnet. So this polarizer is just polarizing the spins. And these try to polarize the spins that are also in the magnet. However, if they're not stronger than the source of the magnetic field, then the spins in the magnet will still precess around the magnetic field as they normally do. And this can actually be quantified in a Hamiltonian setting where you don't even describe the external degrees of freedom of these electrons at all using this quasi-Hermitian setup. So this is a Hamiltonian for just the magnet, not the incoming electrons, which is quasi-Hermitian because this I here, it has an imaginary magnetic field. This thing is associated to the polarization of the electrons that are coming in. This thing experiences a phase transition when these two parameters are equal to each other, and the description of physics in these two phases is completely different. Here you see the periodic motion of the spins precessing around the magnetic field, as we talked about earlier. And in this case, on the spins eventually align with this particular point on the block sphere. And this is a reference. Another example shows up in quantum field theory. This is actually a very simple quantum field theory. It's one of the first quantum field theories people wrote down that has an exact solution. And the reason why is that this thing violates crossing symmetry. So this thing only has these two processes. You have two fermions and a boson, where this fermion can decay into these two, and they can recombine. But for example, there's no processes like this, where, say, you have a V and an antiparticle N coming out like this. We ignore this type of thing. Normally, you have these types of interactions for CPT symmetry, where the charge conjugation turns this into an antiparticle. So the reason why this is nice to solve is because this thing has two different conserved quantities, two different quantum numbers, and that basically makes the Hilbert space decouple, and it becomes really easy. So you can explicitly do renormalization here, non-perturbatively, and this is the result that you get for the renormalized coupling constant. I guess renormalization in quantum field theory is a process where describe the self-interaction of the quantum particles with themselves in the vacuum, and it changes the bare parameters in the theory to physical parameters. And you see, for different values of this physical parameter G, which in principle you could measure, associated to it is an imaginary G0, which happens for this coupling constant, which is larger than this combination of the masses. So for coupling constants larger than this particular thing, you need a quasi, yes?
So what happens below that at G equals mu? I mean, it looks like there's a pole there.
So at G equals mu, basically the problem is that the Hamiltonian becomes non-diagonalizable. So
I mean, that looks like G0 is blowing up.
Sorry?
Looks like G0 is blowing up.
Yes.
So you just interpret that as where you don't go.
I suppose I would just say that the theory is sort of unphysical there. You have to reduce the Hilbert space to a smaller Hilbert space in that case. And this isn't even like the Landau pole, which is suspected to be like a perturbative thing. This is a non-perturbative calculation. Yeah, so this is actually bad. It's not a well-defined theory at that point. So I saved the best one for last. This is the one that I'm working on. Let me first define what I mean by local quantum mechanics. Locality in quantum theory is associated to a tensor product structure. Observables are said to be local if you can calculate them using only local degrees of freedom. And mathematically, what that means is you say that an observable is a tensor product between, just say, the degrees of freedom over here. In addition, I'm going to say that this observable has non-trivial extent if you can't further reduce it into a smaller region. However, the definition for a local Hamiltonian is less restrictive, and that's why you can get away with this non-equivalence between the two of these, basically. A Hamiltonian, if you made it local in this sense, you would never get interaction between two different sites in the theory, and so it'd be kind of boring. So instead, you say it's a sum of local terms. You say that two terms in this graph are, say, near each other. The graph sort of defines whether two sites in the lattice are near each other. And these interactions, or the product of these two terms defines interactions between these two sites in the lattice. So this raises the question, given a potentially local quantum quasi-Hermitian quantum theory with respect to some metric, are there observables which are local to some region? And in general, the answer is no. And so I'm going to show you this specifically in the context of models of fermions, just because models of fermions are pretty simple to analyze. So fermions are defined with respect to this algebra. The most important thing about this algebra is that this creation operator squared vanishes. So a state with a single fermion, which is like an application of this creation operator on the vacuum, can't have two different fermions at the same site. So you use these creation operators to add fermions in, and you use these annihilation operators to get rid of them from a state. This is a Hamiltonian of free fermions. So this thing's quite simple. It just says that you have a fermion at site J, which moves over to site I with some transition amplitude given by this matrix. The reason why these are nice to solve is that they have a relationship with this first quantized theory, where you can map this just into some simple matrix algebra, where you can get a metric for the original Hamiltonian by finding a metric to the first quantized one. So if this thing is Hermitian and positive definite, you can go from this to a metric of the whole Hamiltonian. And I'm going to be studying quasi-Hermitian theories that are defined with respect to a metric like this. Tensor product structures exist. They're defined like this. I'm not going to go into too much detail. I will note that there's also another notion of locality for fermions, which is defined directly from the algebra itself. This notation is a bit jarring, but the important thing is that you say an operator is local if the indices for all the creation and annihilation operators in it live in whatever region you have. So here's the statement about locality. The observables exist if and only if there is a matrix satisfying this where it vanishes outside of the region you care about. So if you can solve this set of matrix equations, then I can tell you whether there are observables in some particular region or not. So this is a toy model. This is a slight generalization of the models I was talking about earlier, where there's still this one source and this one sink of probability, but now there's more sites on the chain. I'm going to be talking about two in two cases in particular this model. One in which the impurities are at the end of the lattice, and one in which the source and sink are at the center. The reason why is because these two have analytical solutions. The other cases, there's not really an analytical solution known for the metric. So I'm just going to leave that to future work, I suppose. So the results are summarized as follows. In this case, there are observables only in the parity symmetric regions. And in the other case, there are observables in every connected region with at least three sites, as well as these two special regions. So I mean, the existence of local observables isn't necessarily related to the symmetries of this. It's more of a property of the metric. Okay, I guess that's all I had to say. So some important questions that I think you could address with this theory. I'm curious to see under what sorts of circumstances these theories actually show up in an emergent context. So coming up with explicit realizations of these phenomenological models, like explicit microscopic derivations of them would be interesting to me. In addition, I'd be interested in seeing what kinds of conditions lead to non-Hermitian renormalized theories that I talked about earlier. The fact that these non-Hermitian theories seem to capture physics that the regular Hermitian theories didn't seems to suggest that maybe you could use them for quantum information processing. And there have been a couple of papers that have suggested that this is in fact the case, but it's still a very new field. And I guess with respect to non-locality, there are two different questions which I find very interesting. One, could you write down a quantum field theory where the observables are non-local in time? And secondly, could you use this for quantum gravity? The story I have about the observables being non-local mirrors the story in quantum gravity very well. In quantum gravity, you have local evolution, which is characterized by gravitons or whatever, but you don't have local observables because of the diffeomorphism invariance of the theory. So in principle, the fact that these two things rhyme suggests that there's some connection. Thanks.
There is an example of a theory that's not local in time, effective field theory. So it's called the effective field theory of large scale structure, which people use to study what happens in cosmology when gravity starts to become non-perturbative and you have structure formation. Maybe you should see if there's any quasi-Hermitian description of this. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I hadn't heard about this. Thanks. Can you send me that later?
Have you seen in any of these toy models these non-local observables that are non-local in time?
I don't know how to define observables that are non-local in time in finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, because the non-locality is associated with the Hilbert space, which isn't defined over time in a regular quantum theory. And I haven't studied the quantum field theoretic version in that much detail. In fact, this quantum field theory I described earlier is kind of a fake quantum field theory. Because you can do all this in zero dimensions. And you still get the same results.
If there are no questions, I'm looking.